Welcome to episode 39 of the Golf Talk podcast, brought to you by thesandtrap.com. This is Eric Borzeski in Pennsylvania, and joining me this week, because Jeff is on a conference, Raffy from New Jersey. Hello.
Hello, everybody.
All right, well, let's get right into it. Starting off with some sad news here in our off-the-tee section. Byron Nelson died last week at the age of 94, most famous for his 11 straight victories, a streak Tiger's currently not quite threatening, but it's been in the news lately. He also won 18 events in addition to the 11 in a row back in 1945. Of course, you know, does the Byron Nelson tournament every year and so on. So, sad news.
Definitely, he was a big figure in golf history. First tournament named after a person was Byron Nelson Classic. We got extensive coverage on the Golf Channel on this whole sad event. And what was really interesting that pretty much every player who spoke about it said everybody remembers him for the 18 wins, 11 in a row. But, you know, the person as he was, how dedicated he was to the game, and that side that, you know, the media and the public doesn't know about, it was something very special.
They said they don't make people like that anymore, many people said. And, of course, Byron Nelson also basically played, and Tiger Woods just surpassed his career winnings. I think he had something like 52 or 53, and Tiger just passed it, yeah. But he quit in his prime. He saved up enough money to buy his ranch and quit, so who knows how far he could have gone, and thus how far he, or how good a golfer he was. We don't really have an accurate measure because he quit so early in his career.
That was very popular back then. Ben Hogan did the same thing, right?
Yeah, he kind of quit when he didn't feel he was as competitive as he used to be, yeah.
Same. And Bobby Jones, I mean, the best example.
True as well, yeah.
Never really started.
The best example of domination we have is in a long time is being shown by Tiger Woods, who, despite him saying his streak is over as far as winning tournaments, managed to win his sixth straight PGA Tour event and also his sixth straight stroke play event at the WGC Amex. This year it was held in England. Last year, you may remember, Woods beat John Daly in a playoff when Daly missed like a 3 or 4 footer, 3-putted. Tiger Woods basically blew away the field in Hertfordshire, England.
Yeah, there was no sign of play after the second round.
Yeah, it was. He led by 5, and then he led by 7, and then he finished winning up by 8, I think. So, kind of boring him. And he eagled the 18th hole the first 3 days.
It wasn't boring. It was very interesting to see if he can eagle 4 times.
Right. We were on the edge of our seats.
I believe it was in the second round where he put the ball on the green from that deep rough with a 5-wood from 268 or something like that. So another of these fantastic shots that he pulled out when he had to.
And until he missed the green on the 12th hole in the final round, he had hit 36 consecutive greens.
That's amazing.
So, I mean, you know, you're not going to do too badly when you do that. I don't care how bad you're putting that day.
It was very interesting though. I was watching a little bit of the coverage, of course, playing myself. But from what I've seen, his swing didn't look too good. I mean, this controlled punch shot, sometimes it looked like he was off balance. The swing was ugly, but the ball was going where it's supposed to go.
Yeah, I don't really know. Maybe it's because he's in England, you know. They do everything funny over there, so he's just trying to fit in.
Are you trying to get back at him for the Ryder Cup or something?
I don't know. He's just...
That's the little needle.
You know, a lot of people... I mean, Jim Furyk was way up there on the leaderboard, too, and people were like, well, why the hell couldn't they play this well the week before?
It's different game.
I don't know. Yeah. It's the mentality. I think Jim Furyk, like Tiger Woods, shares that same mentality where, you know, team play isn't really up their alley, maybe. You know, helping someone else read putts, even if you read them the same way, it's... You're not used to listening to someone else's input.
There's a lot of top athletes who have the same mentality. Look, Kobe Bryant can't play in a team. He's an outstanding player himself.
Right. He also can't leave him in a hotel room alone with a woman. But
Allegedly.
Allegedly. DJ Trahan managed to win a PGA Tour event because, let's be honest, nobody else was there.
Right. That's kind of standard that when there is a big tournament with a top player somewhere else, there is a first winner somewhere.
That's right, and now he's got a 2-year exemption. Jeff and I talked about it last year. I kind of said maybe you just want to give these guys a 1-year exemption if they play, you know, like the BC Open opposite the British Open. Like, who's there? I mean, it's almost like winning a nationwide tour event should get you more prestige than winning an opposite field PGA Tour event.
Yeah, the discussions about the ranking systems, I mean, they're always there, the world rankings. Now, if you introduce another ranking, how important the tournament is depends right. How much exemption you're going to get. That's going to be way too confusing.
Yeah, well, I think the official world golf rankings do it reasonably well. Like, TJ Trahan didn't get a lot of points for his win because the strength of field wasn't there. It was the Ryder Cup points list where people got screwed, you know, where the BC Open winner beat Chris DeMarco, who finished second at the British Open. That was the point list where the people got kind of hosed. So
I think the exemptions are important enough to these players that would make sense to make some kind of value on the class of field when you're winning.
Well, with that, we'll be right back after this message from Titleist. Stay tuned.
For a crisper long iron, grip up on it about an inch.
Be real aggressive through impact.
Keep it short and aggressive.
Maintain your balance.
Take one more club and swing it smooth.
Think happy thoughts.
For a soft draw, close your stance and make sure you release the club.
I'm going to line my feet to the right a little bit, hook the club face, then grip the club.
You can learn a lot from the world's best players.
And one more tip, trust your Titleist.
Oh, that's got to be it, guys. Come on, that's a perfect shot.
And welcome back. This week in our forum topic of the week, some people noticed that David Duval and John Daly were in danger of losing their PGA Tour cards. John Daly is ranked 190th on the money list. These aren't updated. They both made the cut in the Southern Farm Bureau Classic, so these aren't quite updated, but they didn't exactly finish very well either, so they're pretty close. John Daly, 190th. David Duval, 169. With $185,000 and $311,000 in earnings. And again, they didn't earn much at the Southern Farm Bureau, so...
Yeah, Duval actually, after making the cut, dropped two spots. He's 171. I looked him up because he's one of my favorite players.
And
so unfortunately, he doesn't look good. Daly, I didn't look at him.
John Daly is 190 once again, so didn't move up at all.
And it's getting tight. We have not many events left, and I don't think with the showing in the last two rounds that any of these guys has the game right now in order to recover. That's a big hole.
Yeah, now John Daly can use some exemptions and things to play about 12 to 14 or 15 events next year. David Duval, because he has a lot more in career earnings, can use an exemption where he's in the top 50 career earnings to basically play a near full schedule next year.
And almost full schedule in 2008.
Right, so whether or not they're going to choose to do that, obviously Duval probably will, but at the same time his Nike contract is up at the end of this year as well, so it's tough to say what's going on with David Duval.
He may go fishing instead.
Or skiing, yeah.
Oh, skiing.
And John Daly may go to Hooters every day next year, I don't know. I've said before on the podcast that I'm not sure that even Tiger Woods has as much natural talent as John Daly, yet John Daly just simply doesn't get anything out of it, and we're seeing that this year. He may not be around much next year, folks. So if you're a John Daly fan, watch him while you can.
That is so funny to see, though, the outside influence, how it affects the game. I mean, both of these guys were on top of the game, and the trouble in personal lives kind of got to them.
Right.
I mean, you know, Duval had the injuries issues as well, but, you know, all this girlfriend, wife's problem, jails, whatever, money laundering stories, and you know, they just forget that they have to play the game in the meantime, too.
Yeah, it's a job, and with the alimony payments that John Daly has, he probably shouldn't be forgetting that, so I don't know. I don't know that $211,000 will get him very far through the year.
Yeah, and Vegas is expensive, too. So.
That's right. We'll be right back again after this message from Titleist.
When you get in a fairway bunker, choke up on the club a little bit, and I like to aim for the top of the ball.
On long bunker shots, flatten your swing.
You want to feel down in the sand, and then use your instincts.
When you get a plug lie, all you want to do is take a steeper swing and explode down on the ball.
If you want to hit a punch shot, play the ball back in your stance.
When you're in the rough, you're going to want to hit a cut.
One more tip. Trust your Titleist.
You can learn a lot from the world's best players.
Welcome back once again. Now we're in our Beating Balls segment, and we're going to lead off with two stories on Nick Faldo. It was announced last week that Kelly Tillman would be Nick Faldo's broadcast booth partner, just in the broadcast booth, we think. And when the Golf Channel takes on PGA Tour coverage in 2007, of course, the Golf Channel covering Thursday and Friday of every event, and a few of the some of the fall events every round and a few of the spring events every round. So not a whole lot, but Thursday and Friday, the hardcore golfers that have the Golf Channel will get to see Kelly Tillman and Nick Faldo. Tillman's pretty much the do-everything person at the Golf Channel, so no surprise.
One-woman band.
No surprise, yeah. It says here, in addition to Tillman and Faldo, multiple sources said the Golf Channel personality Rich Lerner, calling him a personality, by the way, is a bit of a stretch. Would be in the 17th hole tower, and Jerry Foltz, the dumbest man I've ever seen on television,
will... No, Dan Foltz is the dumbest.
Oh, I don't know. But he'll be the on-course reporter at PGA Tour events next year. So once you get outside the booth, the pickings are slim. Nick Faldo, of course, will be doing... This story just came out today on Tuesday here. Lanny Watkins is out and Nick Faldo's in. He'll be covering the Masters, and CBS has signed Nick Faldo, and Lanny Watkins, instead of accepting a minimized role, has decided to focus on the Champions Tour. So it will be Nick Faldo and Jim Nance at both the Masters and all the events covered by CBS next year. So golf clap for the disappearance of Lanny Watkins. No more of his inane, boring, dumb commentary anymore. But, you know, Nick Faldo is pretty much going to be everywhere next year except on the golf courses.
And I think he's doing a good job. He was on and off on the Golf Channel, you know, commenting on play and doing the color commentary. Doesn't have the sense of humor of Johnny Miller, but, you know, it's okay.
Speaking of Johnny Miller's sense of humor, we'll jump ahead a story here and talk about Johnny Miller's off-air commentary. Of course, Miller was covering the Ryder Cup. Unbeknownst to the NBC crew, their off-air commentary when they'd go to commercial break or whatever was being piped into the U.S. team room. Miller, off the air, was referring to people like Scott Raplank as a lead weight. He was saying Tom Lehman should have benched Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson. He was saying he didn't do that because Lehman was afraid to take the heat. He said lots of bad things that were piped into the team room.
Yes, again, you have to, you know, classify the bad or good. I mean, it was something that was on everybody's mind. He was just speaking his mind, not knowing that it's being broadcasted. And
yeah, I'm not sure he didn't know. He may have known, and you know, this may be his way of getting out of it. But you know, he said he's described Tiger Woods as playing like crap, and that he hit one shot like, quote, a cripple.
Somehow appropriate, though.
Appropriate, but, you know.
Maybe not politically correct, but...
Is it any wonder why the players don't like Johnny Miller?
No, I don't think... I think he earned a reputation way before that, and that was just, you know, just another story to add to the long, long list.
Jumping back now, Phil Mickelson topic. I said last week that it was disgusting how little Phil Mickelson cared or seemed to care about the Ryder Cup. How little he prepared. Right. I mentioned that 2 years ago he switched equipment right before the Ryder Cup, and this year he went in completely unprepared and didn't seem to give a rat's ass the entire time. So I'm going to link to one story by a guy that happens to agree with me and says that, hey, maybe next year or next time around, Mickelson should just opt out.
It looked like he wasn't interested at all, and you know, that goes along with his regular schedule. After the Tour Championship, he's taking off, and that event, he looked like he was forced to play in.
It looks like he was forced, you're right, yeah.
And I'm still going to stand to my opinion after the U.S. Open that this fiasco had such an impact on him, he never recovered from it. I think, personally, there was still a factor why he played so bad, besides the lack of preparation.
I think that's right, and I said that last week, yeah. Here's another article here that we're going to link to in our show notes, which, of course, you can find on our site and our podcasts. Archives. Mike Weir is going to replace Phil Mickelson in the Grand Slam. Phil is pretty much done for the year. He's not going to play in the Tour Championship. He's not even going to play in this, you know, the silly season Grand Slam field. So the field will be Mike Weir, Jim Furyk, Jeff Ogilvie, and Tiger Woods. Two major winners, and then two other guys kind of glomming on there. Of course, Woods won two of the majors, so you're only ever going to have three. It seems to me, I said this in the forum too, I'm fine with not playing the silly season event, like the Grand Slam maybe. Not playing the Tour Championship rubs me the wrong way. But at the same time, this is the event that Phil Mickelson shot 59 in 2 years ago. You know, it seems it's an excuse to take your family to Hawaii, play a pretty laid-back round of golf or two. It seems to me that he just tries to avoid any event that Tiger Woods is in, except maybe the majors that he's almost forced to. I mean, name three other tournaments in a year that Phil Mickelson plays in that Tiger Woods is also in.
Now that rumor has been you know, floating around for a while that he's definitely avoiding strong field and building up his total victories count that way. I don't know if this
He's one of the few top players that plays events like the FBR Open or the Bell South Classic the week before the Masters. These aren't strong field events. And, you know, he played and lost to Woods both times in the last four championships at Doral. That's one event I can name where they both played in. I really can't name off the top of my head many other events they both played in.
I'm trying to be nice because I personally despise the guy, so I don't want to say too many bad things about him. But definitely, yeah, you're up to something there.
He's a pussy. You can say it.
Like him? He's a pussy.
There you go.
Or rather, he shows balls in the wrong time, the wrong place.
When has he ever shown balls?
On the U.S. Open in 18th hole.
Well, the balls are stupid.
Thinking that he can. Okay, yeah.
He thought with the wrong head, I guess.
Right.
Tiger Woods says that curing America's Ryder Cup ills won't be easy, but basically he says we need an infusion of good young players. You know, the problem I see with that is the good young players are all European, and they're all educated here in the United States in colleges, and they all learn to win on the PGA Tour or in our colleges, and then we ship them back over, and they play enough European Tour events that they qualify as Europeans. You know, Luke Donald went to Northwestern. Paul Casey was educated over here. You know, many of them marry American women. You know, they're as American almost as Tiger Woods, and yet they play for the other team.
It's definitely a problem, but, you know, in order to... Other point of view, I mean, Tiger is right. If you look at the average age of all the players versus the experience, I mean, the Americans were much older, but much less experience in the Ryder Cup competition. That doesn't make much sense.
Well, that's because Davis Love and Fred Couples and...
Davis who?
Jay Haas, of all people. You know, they hung on for quite a while, and, you know, we're still playing Ryder Cups at Fred Funk 2 years ago. Our captains haven't even made it exactly easy for some of the young guys to get on there. Here's a somewhat tongue-in-cheek article, somewhat sarcastic, somewhat biting article here on 10 ways to give the U.S. team a chance. One of them is to make the USA the Americas. You know, I don't know that... I was thinking, you know, it may, this stretch may not go on long. I think America may catch up, but then I just read that the Junior Ryder Cup type thing that pits the U.S. against the European team, the U.S. lost 19.5 to 4.5. So...
Okay.
We may not even have the young guys coming up to beat it, so... I don't know. Maybe making the USA the Americans may be the way to go. Tell Phil to get his finger out. Basically, tell Phil to forget it, you know. Take a pass. Some other things. No women inside the ropes. Keep them outside. Heck, leave them at home. Make some of the players play on the European team tour. Hypnotize Tiger into thinking that the Ryder Cup is a major.
That's a good one.
It won't work so long as he has to play with a partner. I'm pretty sure he'll figure it out, you know.
I definitely like the last one, though, the six-point head start.
Give the U.S. team a six-point head start. Still wouldn't have done it this year, would it?
No, it wouldn't, but it would feel better.
They would have only lost by a couple.
Maybe just they don't feel comfortable with coming from behind. They have to be ahead.
Could be, yeah. I mean, Tiger Woods wins all of his majors from ahead, right? So, all right. And our last story here this week, a sad tale, basically, of Ping canceling two accounts with two golf stores because they discounted clubs to military members. Two clubs in Georgia, I believe, were discounting clubs.
Augusta, yep.
Yeah, 10% for military employees or military men. Ping has a standard policy where you cannot sell equipment below a certain price. It's in an agreement. It's not a specific contract. And it terminated the accounts. Of course, in this day and age of the internet, the story got out. Many people were very critical of Ping, and so Ping has issued a statement saying, we're going to look at ways to serve our military whatevers. But I've heard stories like this in the past where, for example, one guy sold at a discount, you know, a Ping driver or something to a breast cancer fundraiser at a discounted price, and his account was turned off because he sold it below a certain price. Rather silly. I mean, I understand the price controls that people have to make sure that people aren't getting ripped off or to keep clubs profitable, but...
I would like to give them the benefit of the doubt that they just have bureaucracy machines set in place, and if they find out about, you know, discounting sales, they just turn it off and then research later. It's not necessarily politically correct, but let's see how they react. I mean, if they're going to change their policies when there are some special circumstances like the U.S. military or you know, handicapped customers.
They may.
You know.
They may. I mean, shoot first and ask questions later isn't always the best policy in terms of PR, and it's certainly come up to bite Ping in the butt this time. So,
and they're losing ground in the market, in my opinion, to other big players, so that's not going to help.
That about does it for episode 39 of the Golf Talk Podcast. I'd like to thank Rafi for joining us this week in place of Jeff Smith.
It was my pleasure.
We won't be back next week because we'll be in North Carolina at the Newport Cup, so join us 2 weeks from today, and we'll have more to say about all that we missed in the 2 weeks. And again, this was episode 39. Thank you, and talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Good night.